Maybe I'm in love with you. I say maybe. Maybe I'm in love with you. You put your arms around me, I'm in love with you. You say that you believe me, that our love is true. I say maybe. Maybe I'm in love with you. I say maybe.
Good afternoon. You've got Living Writers on WCBN FM Ann Arbor. I'm T. Hetzel, and today I'm so happy to have Elizabeth Schmuel here in the studio on this warm October day. Elizabeth, welcome.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on down to the studio today. And I often say that to people, Elizabeth, but to you, it's even more real.
I really came down to the studio.
Like several flights.
Yes.
could you fill everyone in a little bit? Because you're coming from upstairs.
I am. So I work at the University of Michigan in Office of Enrollment Management, and I am a senior content strategist, and I also do social media for admissions.
So a few floors up.
And just a few floors up.
So we've already decided, Stephanie and I have decided that Elizabeth is going to come down more often and
definitely
help us with, like, there's been many, you know, I don't know, there's been whale sounds today.
There have been.
Some early Halloween spooky sounds that have been created. So who knows what's next? Before we get going with a conversation, I'm going to read the short bio in the back of the book, Elizabeth's book, Premonitions, out this year with Wayne State University Press. Thanks to Christina Stonehill for sending along a copy of the lovely book. It's beautiful, too.
Thank you.
And you were last night at Literati?
I was. It was wonderful. Literati is, I mean, my favorite bookstore. It's so beautiful. And it was so nice to have, you know, such a great crowd. And Keith Taylor introduced me, which was wonderful.
Keith Taylor.
Yes. And my former professor, Laura Kozyszki, was in the audience, too.
Hello.
So that was, it was so great.
Yeah. Did it feel, it feels like it might have been not a homecoming because you're here, but maybe a rite of passage somehow to have these folks there as well as you're in town.
Absolutely. And also kind of full circle because I went here undergrad and
in dance.
Yep. Dance and writing too.
Oh,
so
okay.
Yeah, and I worked with Keith and Laura in undergrad, and it was just really neat to have them in the room. Yeah.
Well, brilliant. Well, it's so glad to have you in this room now too, Elizabeth. Elizabeth Schmuel is a multidisciplinary artist whose work appears in Michigan Quarterly Review, The Rumpist, Paper Darts, Pank, Hobart, Pinwheel, and elsewhere. She has worked at various nonprofits, including the John F. Kennedy Center for Performing Arts, and currently works at the University of Michigan Ann Arbor, which we already established. and you live outside the town limits.
No, I live here.
Oh,
yeah,
you do? Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Though my family has a fruit farm outside of town. Yes, which is where I'm from originally.
So I think my confusion comes from that setting informing so much of Premonitions.
Yes.
It feels like as a reader.
Absolutely. Yeah, it definitely does. And that, so the farm has been in my family 103 years. My father grew up there. And even though as a child growing up, I lived in a lot of different places. I was born in Florida, lived in Illinois, also lived throughout Michigan, but it was always a priority to come back to the farm. So vacations, weekends, that's where we would
Would return to the farm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So definitely every summer for a chunk of time.
Yes,
or so.
Absolutely. So I grew up, you know, helping pick peaches and having peach fuzz all over me and helping sort fruit. I also help sell at farmers markets, which is interesting because when I lived in New York City for a while, I felt a little, you know, disconnected really in a big city with so much cement that I went to the Union Square Farmers Market, which happens to be the biggest one in New York City, and just approached a farmer and asked for a job. And I started working there also on the weekends.
So two jobs.
Yeah. I normally have more than one job.
That seems to be a sort of a poet's artist's way often, isn't
yeah,
it?
For sure.
Oh, well, so Elizabeth, Premonitions, this is your debut book of poetry. You're published elsewhere. You write for the Michigan Quarterly Review, You've also published other books as well.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I have another book called Presto Agitato, A Dictionary of Modern Movement. And so that was, again, like a dance dictionary. So I grew up dancing. I still dance today. But it's set to music. It's set to Beethoven's Moonlit Sonata, the third movement. And each definition, it's kind of like a prose poem. They all have two different, you know, like a number one and a number two. And then there is a figure drawing that lays on top of the definition, too. Yeah.
Lovely. Well, I can imagine that. And now on the table with us, we've got Premonitions.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
The artifact itself. So Premonitions, could you say where did the title come from?
Sure.
Talk a little bit about that to start us off.
Absolutely. So for me, it was two part. I always think, and I think in general in the culture, there's this idea of premonitions being negative things that might happen in the future that we, you know, that are looming that we don't want to happen. But I wanted to flip that on its head a little bit in this collection because there are, you know, poems, premonitions that are really beautiful, like wonderful things happening. So that was the first reason for the title. And the second being that my family on my mother's side experiences premonitions like prevalently. So I do too, a lot of times, either just in thoughts or dreams, but usually they come true. So, yeah.
And so and they usually come true.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very important part of it. Mm-hmm. There at the end. It's important to listen through to the whole response because the dreams figure into this book as well.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's easy to try and believe the voice of the eye through the book is definitely connects directly to the voice of the poet that's the name whose name is on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
Like this, it's like a not like a distanced eye or so. So it's interesting because I reading this, I'm trying to always keep in mind that there's like the distance and none of this has to be you know, it's obviously
yeah.
not creative nonfiction. It's also, I mean, you can't, there's right. so many surreal moments as well as named dreams and, you know, talking, inviting foxes and, you know,
yes.
Many things. How do you see the, I don't know, where do you see the premonitions and the dreams bumping into each other in the book?
Sure. Absolutely.
Or if they do.
Yeah, no, I think they do. I think, kind of on that line, I was also trying to look at, you know, the body and nature as really one. So there's a lot of going in and out of the landscape and the body. And similarly, I wanted to do the same thing with dreams. Some people have told me, I don't know, is this person awake or dreaming in different instances? And I like that ambiguity.
Well, because that also feels that way in life sometimes as
Absolutely.
You're walking around, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Let's look at the structure a little bit, if
sure.
you don't mind, Elizabeth.
There's yeah.
so I love that that color has such a foregrounded role, even from the cover itself. The color seems to bleed into each other. And then there's a color page with dots.
Yes.
Before the very first poem, so more connected. So it's after the title page, and then it's these colored dots that become part that we see throughout the book.
Mm-hmm.
And the first colored dot on the first page of the book is number 7,
mm-hmm.
and it's blue. For those of you following along at home, it's the first page. and then there's colors all along with numbers, and they're in a chronological order, but there's gaps. Could you talk a little bit about this?
Yeah, absolutely. So first I'll address the color in the dots. So for me, I have synesthesia, and specifically with numbers, colors, and moods. So when I first started writing this collection, I mean, this is how the titles came out. I had a number associated with a color and a mood, and then I used that as the anchor for the poem. So for me, 7 with the color is really tied to everything that's in the poem, the words.
Can you read that?
7. I stopped using the internet years ago. All of the places I wanted to go weren't there. Now the fig, now the peach. And when I want to be away from the orchard, I go to the river and the river feeds me. Some days I miss the web and start feeling low. I go to the barn where the air is thick with straw and heat. I climb the ladder to the swallow nests. I dance until sweat turns my tank top transparent, until my underwear clings to my thighs, my sweat evaporating, turning me more into me, disappearing.
Thank you. So this poem, you were speaking earlier about the blending of the self and nature, or mm-hmm. the person and the body and nature, and that blurring. So it seems like, is that why this poem also is coming first in the book? Because there's this clear suggestion of this disappearing, or some sort of something that's coming or afoot.
Absolutely. Yeah. I wanted to kind of start out right away with that idea that, the self is going to blend into, you know, different parts of the landscape, into different parts of the conscious. So I thought this was a good place to start. Yeah.
And so did you, because it seems like the numbers then, because this is number 7 mm-hmm. and it's working as the title as well of the poem. But does this mean, because then it seems like the order of them was sort of decided at the beginning. It wasn't as if you changed the number, because you said this poem, these words connect to this. This is the number 7.
Correct. Yes. And so I will say last night someone asked this question actually at Literati. I wrote the book out of order. So, you know, I don't remember which poem was my first poem, but it was not number 7. And the idea was, so Wayne State and I, the editors there, we kind of went back and forth about this. Would we have the poems in an order, that, you know, that I wrote them in, that was more thematic, or would we go in chronological order? And so I really liked the idea of going in chronological order with there being holes. So for 2 reasons, I liked that it implied that something was missing. And I thought that said something about the speaker too, that, you know, maybe that leaves the reader kind of guessing or thinking, well, are there other poems? Am I not getting to see them? Are they not included? And I thought that really mimicked life. We don't get to see everything. And I liked that was present.
And it turns out, because it feels like when you're looking at these, it feels like because of how they've been ordered, that it is in an arc. So you might have written number 7 after, I guess, number 80, clearly, right?
Yeah.
When you read through it for the first time, when you went to Wayne State with the manuscript, had you put it in the numerical order or the chronological order, or no?
No.
Because you did talk it over with them.
Right, exactly. And actually, when I went to them with the book, it was not completely written. So I only, initially, I think I sent them maybe 15 poems or something, and I was still working on it and developing it. So it wasn't complete yet.
So it was the concept, though. You knew what you wanted, and
yes.
You had like this map of these connections.
Yes,
that you
absolutely.
Were going to explore. Excellent. Okay, well, we're going to take a short break, and then
okay.
we'll be back.
Great.
To talk more with Elizabeth Schmuel here, her book out with Wayne State University Press, Premonitions. I'm T. Hetzel. We've got Stephanie Carpenter behind the glass. We'll be back. Welcome back. If you're just tuning in, I'm glad you did. You've got Living Writers on WCBN FM Ann Arbor. I'm T. Hetzel, and today Elizabeth Schmuel is here. Her book Premonitions on the table with us. And we mentioned in the first quarter of the show that Elizabeth just read at Literati Bookstore. So I'm thinking you also did some book signing and
yes.
Right. So they might even have some extra signed editions there at Literati if people wanted to swing by and
absolutely
pick one up.
Okay. Yes, please do.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent. So thanks for picking the songs for today's show.
You're welcome.
Can you tell us a little bit about this one?
Yes. Okay. So Denise, one of my favorite songs by Randy and the Rainbows. I love this song because it doesn't matter what's going on in my life. If I hear this song, I feel like getting up and dancing. And so, I mean, I can have the worst day ever. And if this song is on, I turn into like a wild banshee and just, I had to restrain myself from getting up and dancing in here.
That's true. I was just thinking, you don't need to do that. This is a good Living Writers and WCBN, totally in favor of unrestrained, whatever goes. I guess except for the FCC stuff.
Right. Yes, of course.
Some constraints anyway. Yes. Well, and you say that as someone who also has studied dance professionally in Chicago.
Yes.
And also danced in the Pantsuit Power flash mob.
Yes. Yes.
Let's take a moment to talk about this, because I found this on your website, a link to it, and it was so happy sad. It was so beautiful that I'm going to admit this in front of everyone. I started weeping in my office today because I thought of what could have been too. And
absolutely.
In the last few years. But Elizabeth, do you mind, like, how did you get involved with them? What is this project? And
sure. Absolutely. So, a dancer that I've worked with before, Bobby Janae Smith, who's incredible. I actually have a poem in this collection for her that I can read. But she, through a friend, this friend Celia Rawson Hall, was putting together the Pantsuit Nation. She wanted to do something uplifting to show that people were supporting Hillary. She decided that we were all going to wear pantsuits. And I think she kind of... She went everywhere in New York to a bunch of different stores, and we had a fitting. We got to try on our pantsuit and pick our color. I was purple, which was very exciting. But we learned the dance by video, and then we would have rehearsals. And we did one performance in Union Square, which is where I also worked at the farmers market. And then we were asked to do it again in Washington Square Park, and we were told, you know, there's going to be a celebrity there. They wouldn't tell us who it was until we came out and we found out it was Madonna. And it was really wild to be, you know, there. There was so much positive energy. And also, as you said, even watching it now, I get teary. I'm like, oh my gosh, this could have been, you know, a totally different environment we're living in right now. But yeah.
And so you, because of dance, your dance background, that was like the connection in with this. And
yes.
But were all the people, though, dancers, or was it because there were people who, I don't know, like someone who was pregnant and somebody who was holding a child, and there were just, and there were men and women, and
yes. Yeah. So they did hold auditions and selected dancers. So we had to do that. But there was also in the background, if you do end up watching the video, anyone listening. So in Union Square, there's a little bit of like a raised area, and that's where all women and children, and as you said, there was someone, maybe more than one person, who was pregnant, and we had different sections choreographed, so those dance moves were a little bit more simple than some of the other ones.
That's definitely true. But thanks for doing that and being, do you think the I guess it's like to have some sort of activism in your life seems valuable. Are you able to find ways to do that that aren't, I guess, flash mobs?
Yeah.
Or is that your bar? You're like, if someone's putting together.
Is there a flash mob? Sign me up. Yeah, exactly. No, yeah. I mean, I think also in some regard, you know, working at nonprofits has been kind of a political conscious choice on my behalf.
And arts nonprofits.
Arts nonprofits, yes, specifically. So I also worked at the Boys and Girls Club in Benton Harbor for probably at least 8 years. And they're really near and dear to me. That is, of course, where my farm is. And I love it there. So that kind of got me started. I started working there in high school and then kept a relationship with them even after.
And so when do you go back to the farm, like now? Because I know you said growing up you would go in the summer or different holidays. Is it similar or?
Yeah, it's definitely similar. I try to go as much as I can. I was there last weekend, actually. And usually when I go, I also try to visit Lake Michigan because it's 10 minutes or so away from where my farm is. But I, you know, this past weekend I was picking pumpkins and gourds and apples and yeah. So I like to go out there. I often write. And then I also will dance in the landscape. I've, you know, done some like video dances, I would say, with different people, and we use the space in that way.
Is that the collaborative movement video poems? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, yeah. I've worked with an author, Mary Kim Arnold, who she is an incredible writer, so you should definitely look her up. And she is also a musician. And so she would make music and I would make the dance and we would cut the video together. And then I also made a lot of little tiny dance poems with a friend, Molly Elizabeth Ross. She is currently in New York, so we don't get to collaborate as much, but we grew up dancing together. So,
and what are these? I don't know. Is it possible to describe one? I know we're not a visual medium, but it is visual in that everyone can, like, I think it's easy to imagine when you're listening to radio.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, so part of the reason why I call them poems is because of the nature of them. Sometimes they're a little bit narrative in nature, but really it's the video editing process that to me feels a lot like editing a poem, restructuring, deciding what goes where, especially when you are sending it to music. I find it really similar and also relaxing. But so usually what happens is sometimes we will have phrases that we create together and then we will film them. Sometimes we'll also use improvisation techniques. I really am into that as well.
And how does that work with dance? Because would both of you be having movement in it, or would that be the part that you were doing in this collaboration? Or
If I work with another dancer, I don't work in such a way that I kind of like dictate and set choreography. Usually it always is collaborative. So if there are more than one of us dancing, we have built the phrases together. We've tried out things, or we have decided that we're going to do some improv and we just move to whatever we want to
do. And when you say built the phrases together, is that something that's describing a movement, or is that words, a lyric?
That's,
or both?
Yeah, you know, I think it works both ways. So if we have music in mind, we are either consciously moving to the music or against the music. But sometimes the music is added after, and the movements that we make don't necessarily have a story or words, but we might make them up as we go.
Can people find these on your website?
Yeah, you can find some of them on my website. Yes, definitely.
What's the path? Like, would you click on the, I don't know, is there an easy way? Just because I'm thinking we're talking about it, so people might be curious to
see
one.
Absolutely, yeah. If you do go onto my website, which is justmyname.com, there is a tab at the top that says Move, and there will be a lot of different links, and feel free to check them out. Sometimes I'll post them on Instagram too. Last night, Keith was kind of giving me a hard time about the fact that I don't have a really long piece that people can watch. I had told him, some people out there might be familiar with the poet Jamal May.
Oh, and, yes, friend of the show.
Yeah.
Pearl of the program.
Right, exactly. And so he is also a musician, and we've been collaborating a little bit with movement and music too, and also with another dancer named Ari Mokdad, who's also a writer. So I'm always really interested in collaboration and, you know, joining forces. I find that creative people often do many creative things, which is exciting.
And it fuels the work, and then there's more. Yeah.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
Does the movement when you're dancing, is that something, because it feels like it's dancing is named within poems in Premonitions, explicitly named. But when you're creating poems, are you ever starting first with movement?
I don't think so. I mean, usually I'm, no, I'm not usually starting with movement. But I would say the exception to that would be with the dance dictionary, where I literally did look at, you know, certain dance terms, and the movement was very much set to the writing. So that's an exception, but not in Premonitions.
And so for these poems, how did it start? Were you thinking, did you want to start with a number, and or was it the color, or what was it?
I'm wondering if I can find the first poem I wrote. I'll look while I'm explaining, but I wrote the poem first, and then I decided I wanted the title to be a number that corresponded to the poem. Yeah.
So once you had the text, you were able to feel something that made it clear that was a particular number.
Yes.
So what does that feel like? Are you able to say what it feels like? Like what could connect to that?
Yeah. I think the easiest reference is color, probably. So like the number 3 connects to yellow for me. The number 4 connects to red. And oftentimes, you know, with those colors, I have associations. So that's kind of where I went. And the mood of the poem, to me, would communicate a number, which also had a color associated with it.
So there's so many interconnections with it.
Yes.
When did you realize? Well, actually, do you have the poem to read?
I do.
Let's read that, and then we'll go to break, and we'll come back.
Okay. 17. I'm in a white dress. It's dirty. I go for walks in the peach orchard and pretend the trees are my friends. The pretending doesn't seem like pretending. I'm wet and salty, and when I feel my skin burning, I walk home. I'm dirtier than before. Look at my nails. I'm hungry. Inside the farmhouse, the air is cool. The water I pour myself is cooler. I drink it at the oak table and smoke. I don't eat because I know if I hold off, I will get drunk quicker later. I stare out the bay window at the elm leaves. There's wind.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thanks.
The pretending does not feel like pretending. Yes. Today on the program, Elizabeth Shmuel is here. Her book, Premonitions, out now with Wayne State University Press. I'm T. Hetzel. You've got Living Writers. We'll be back. Welcome back. You've got Living Writers on WCBN FM Ann Arbor. I'm T. Hetzel, and today Elizabeth Shmuel is here in the studio. Her book, Premonitions, out with Wayne State University Press. Thanks for picking that song. We were both. Why the Whitney Houston?
Because she's the best. And she, yeah, again, another, you know, instant mood lifter for sure. And I have danced to that song many times. I've often had people tell me, oh, you know, I can't dance, especially not around you because you're a dancer. And I'm like, everybody can dance. That's not true. Everyone should be able to dance, just like everyone should be able to write, I think.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And don't let anyone tell you that you can't or shouldn't.
Exactly.
For yeah. anything, but especially dancing and writing.
Absolutely.
But for anything.
Absolutely. And I've really found that, you know, dancing prepared me for writing in that way that because I trained initially in classical French ballet, I was just, I mean, we are told from a young age that if there's a correction, assume it's for you. It's not just for the person getting it. And so for me, I was used to receiving that kind of criticism, but I found that my peers in writing programs especially were not used to that. That criticism was really hard for them to take. And I think dance just really gave me this.
It toughened you up. Yeah. There might have been some calluses on your feet,
oh, yeah.
But there was also some toughening up in other areas too.
Exactly. Yeah. So I found it to be an asset for sure.
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
Well, so before the break, you read for us the first poem that you wrote that sort of started this whole
yes.
premonitions
yes.
collection off the mm-hmm. the concept.
Right, exactly. And as I told you previously, I wrote the poem and then I put the number to it. And for me, that's really immediate. So I can say, you know, right now there are images of trees and stuff. And I do associate the number 7 with green. And so if you are reading along or you do pick up the book on page 6, poem 17, there is a green cast to it. So that was, I mean, that was intentional. Also kind of the warm feeling is there, even though coldness is talked about. It's, again, as I was saying, it's hard to explain it because for me it's so immediate. It makes so much sense in my brain. And yet when I try to voice it, I realize that it's not that way for everybody.
But you're stressing the immediacy of it. So it's just something that almost feels like a constant presence. So if you try to point your awareness at it, you're enveloped in it, or it's just, so that immediacy is something that's
exactly
so critical to it.
Definitely.
So then not that we want to make this into like some sort of, find our way through the book, but what was this next poem then that came to you like in this series?
I'm not really sure which one was next.
Okay.
But I know it wasn't 18.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It was somewhere else in the collection. But I should definitely, I'm glad you're asking that. I should go back and source those or even look in my, you know, email to Wayne State and see what those first poems were. Yeah, that would be really, really fascinating. I also wanted to say, I don't know if you know this or said this, T, but each dot, so I painted each dot by hand, actually. I also illustrate essays for The Rumpus, and I've just, along with dance, I've been painting and drawing for a really long time, and I knew that, you know, I could have described the colors to the designer, but
not really, because there are, well, I mean, I'm sure you would do a great job at it, but it's there are so many, like there's different tones within each of them and different shadows within each one as well.
Yes. And again, many thanks to Wayne State for that. So, the designer, Rachel Ross, was the one responsible, you know, for scanning all of these in. I mean, there were all these dots, they were all on one piece of paper. So she, you know, is magical and was able to cut them all out, and they look fantastic. She also did the cover design. And yeah.
Was this using a photograph of yours?
I definitely want to talk about the photograph. I knew pretty early on that I wanted this to be the photo on the cover of my book. And Wayne State, again, was just fantastic to work with and really advocated for that for me, even though we did go through a few other options. But my friend Jordan Sullivan is an artist, and this image was taken outside of his grandmother's home the day of her funeral. After the funeral took place, he went outside her home and there was a field of wildflowers. And he took this picture. He also, you should definitely look him up. He is an amazing artist. He actually was just in Detroit for a residency. But this, maybe not this image, but Jordan has work in MoMA, New York, and San Francisco. And it just feels like such a gift to have this image be on the cover of my book.
Oh, so and if folks go to your website, ElizabethSchmuel.com, and the last name S-C-H-M-U-H-L, you can see the cover and elsewhere in the ether, the online internet world out there.
Exactly.
Well, Elizabeth, would you mind reading another poem for us? Like, is there the...
Sure.
With the themes, because you said that this is... Because there is like a joy and there's like freedom and this feeling of opening outward in this book. But I feel like there's also undercurrents of real pain and abandonment and maybe some violence against the self, as well as this feeling of like in the first poem that you read to us, number 7, with this disappearing, which can be something that doesn't always feel positive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You're right. There's more than just, you know, just like beautiful, happy poems for sure. I can read 66 for you, which has a sense of the opposite of joy, I would say. 66. Morning snakes through the orchard. Young apricot trees like wind chimes touch, then part. I wake on my belly and into the loneliness stitched to my bones. I'm sore with it. Wait, a voice says. I do. One, then two bodies, gray pelts running. My bones soften when they find me. The coyotes growl, their teeth yellowed, sharp.
There's another coyote poem as well, when the speaker is saying, I want to have something to give them so that they'll know I'm kind. Is that right?
Yeah.
I'm probably not remembering.
No, I don't have a
steel trap. My friend Katie Hartsock would know the exact way of saying that line, having only read it once, even though I've read your book twice. But
yes, let me find that.
I might have it. It's one of these.
61. I cut my heart open. It's certain. The meat of a half dove still beating and bloody. I've dreamed about her before. In the dream, she didn't look this delicious. There's plenty to eat on this farm, and yet there's only me. Some things spoil. I'll leave her out as an offering, and then I'll watch and wait.
That's another one. So I think I was very aware when I was reading Premonitions of these currents running through it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
No, absolutely.
But I was just one reader. But also there's so much of the... Well, maybe let's talk about that one before moving away from it too quickly.
Okay.
So would this be part of, because you said that there are dreams within the book, which are named as well. But so this one, is this feeling more, is this one of the premonitions, or where does that surface maybe more concretely, which is weird to say about a premonition. So good luck answering this.
Right, exactly.
Elizabeth.
I was going to say. somewhere in between. I think a lot of these poems are in the in-between, which I think, you know, for me, not that I am necessarily the speaker of the poems, but I do think that I have been in the in-between before, you know, depending on where I've been living or what I've been studying. I come from a family that is not very creative at all. I have some family members that like to do arts and crafts, but everyone has really practical careers. My father grew up on a farm and his father was a farmer. So I kind of toe this line of being in the in-between, at least in that context, for sure.
And so how did you decide so young then to be able to be yourself and to, in college, stake the claim with dance and creative writing? Because that's really brave.
I think it wasn't a choice at all for me. I just, you know, I will say that about writing and dance too. A lot of dancers, a lot of writers give it up at a certain point in time, and I've just never been able to because I can't. I might have, you know, I think there were different parts of my life where I had decisions to make, but I've always decided to keep art in my life because life is so boring without art. Yeah.
And so I'm just trying to think if there's something like, I was just, yeah, I don't know. That's lovely. I just think because I think other people might feel the same way, but maybe it wasn't as, I don't know. Cause you did start young. And as you explained it with your family, I don't know if there's more to say.
I mean, I think also I had, you know, supportive parents for sure. Even though they might not have had creative backgrounds, they saw that I loved this, you know, that I loved dance, that I loved writing, that I loved painting. And they supported me doing it. I mean, I was, you know, as a teenager, I was dancing until 10 o'clock at night on weeknights, and it was my mother who would pick me up from those rehearsals. So even though there was definitely a focus on, you know, practicality and going to college and getting a job and all of that, they still supported the arts. I mean, they supported me. So that meant supporting the arts. Yeah.
Let's take a short break and then we'll be back. Today on Living Writers, Elizabeth Schmuel is here. Her book of poems, Premonitions, out with Wayne State University Press. I'm T. Hetzel. We've got Stephanie Carpenter behind the glass and we'll be back. Welcome back. You've got Living Writers. I'm T. Hetzel. Today on the program, Elizabeth Schmuel is here. Her book of poems, Premonitions. Elizabeth, thanks so much for coming down to the studio today.
Thank you for having me.
Talking about poems, talking about your work.
Absolutely.
And the importance of art and making space for it in your life, no matter what else is going on.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I love that it's also all kinds of art. When you mention it, it's movement, it's dance, it's writing, it's poems, it's painting, video.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm sure you're doing more audio pieces too. Face is covered. And so what are some of your current projects? Like what's happening now?
Sure.
In your world?
So recently I purchased this book called Make Ink, and it's by a man named Jason Logan, and he owns something called the Toronto Ink Company, and he forages throughout Toronto and the city, and, you know, he collects like walnuts, he'll collect rusted nails, and he makes ink out of them. He sells the ink, and I was just really, you should really check out Toronto Ink Company on Instagram. What he's doing is gorgeous. And so I was really inspired by him because I thought, oh, I can do that. I can use things on my farm and I can make ink out of it. And then I can, you know, paint and perhaps, who knows if that will have words with it or not. But so I did. I started. I've made so far. I'm making a blue out of copper wire I found in the basement of a really old farmhouse. And then I also made pokeberry ink. It was a weed growing by the chicken coop on my farm. And I just love the idea that the ink holds an environment in it. And so that's something I'm working on that I'm really excited about.
And what, when you're, are the colors emerging now, like, are they then into shapes or is it more of an abstraction where you feel the compressed environment, perhaps through the colors themselves, or?
That's a great question. Right now, I have not painted anything. I'm doing just tests. So I only have the ink. So we'll see what happens with it.
And maybe, as you said, it could be into words.
Absolutely. Yeah, it definitely could be into words.
Which connects to then the connection of the numbers, the colors and the moods.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm really excited about that. And aside from that, I'm also and have been working on for some time a memoir about my relationship to dance, because, I mean, it's I know it will go on for my entire life. And I've started exploring writing about different objects I've held on to, like, you know, that I don't use anymore, like point shoes or a skirt or leotards. I still have, you know, leotards from when I was very young. And then also thinking about spaces, I've danced in rooms, mapping that. It just feels like very rich to me. So, and it would be nonfiction as well, but it will take me a long time. So,
oh, it sounds like a wonderful project, though.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of like mapping the spaces, like somehow making a visual picture of spaces that may not even exist anymore.
Exactly.
And there, that reminds me of one of the poems in Premonitions, where I feel like there's a line where it says, no room will hold. I don't know where it, does that ring a bell?
Yes.
Elizabeth?
It does.
I don't know. And I love how there's also a couple of October poems too.
Oh yeah.
You know what? I don't usually make requests, but maybe could you read number 101 and number 103?
Absolutely. 101. The mirror of my heart is reflecting fields of wildflowers that grew in after we stopped tending to the asparagus. Look what comes of letting go, perfuming chaos complete with butterflies and a warm summer breeze. 103. In October, I do not know which is which. The iridescent hanging plum is my heart. I am tired but not yet ready for winter, so I go wandering. Along the unkempt edges of the orchards, the black raspberries grow wildly. They cut into my flesh in several places. The cuts immediately fill with petals, soft and white, a churning wave of blossoms. I walk with a new tenderness. Soon the wind will blow the petals, a blizzard of flowers. Burning red, the scar where the blossoms once held, hoping to bear fruit. I lick it and it's sweet.
Thanks for reading those.
Yeah, of course.
And because it is, it's October now.
I know, I can't believe it.
Although it feels like there's a summer breeze outside. So
yeah.
Thank you. I felt like these two poems somehow needed to make their way into the artifact of today.
Oh, good. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I know.
But we were talking about that other poem. Are you able to find it? Because you're like going through the pages. Where I should, if I'm going to mention something, I should probably know where it is. But
I'm trying to think of
this makes for compelling radio. We are now turning pages in a book.
We will find it.
But I guess it's that feeling of like, I won't be contained, but, or I'm becoming more that something other than the self. I feel like that's the self, but not the self.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel that, I think, as an artist that works in different mediums, especially in writing and in dance, there is, you know, people have talked about it as creative flow, but where you kind of leave yourself where you're so involved in what you're doing that you do disappear.
There's no idea of time.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that definitely happens to me when I'm writing poems, both in the initial phase and also definitely in the editing phase.
So you're smiling when you say that too, definitely.
Yes.
In the editing phase.
Mm-hmm.
Is this part of your favorite part of the process?
Oh yeah. I think, I mean, even now, you know, I could go back and rearrange and I think that's so fun. That might have a little to do with, so my mother has OCD and we really like organization. And so I do. I love organizing, rearranging. So editing really appeals to me.
It's wonderful because sometimes it's nice to feel that there's like a happiness in that.
Oh,
and maybe it's also because you've created something and then it's kind of finding it more so.
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost like excavating, like, or, you know, with people who are sculptors and use clay, you're digging away, you're scooping out things, you're subtracting, maybe you're rearranging to create something. And I think it's so fun.
So there's Premonitions is full of I think, which is apparent from what we heard today on the program, Elizabeth, too, the sensory, like the blurring of the sensory details, a flooding of this, all different types of senses. And it makes me think, when did you have the experience of knowing that the numbers had moods and colors, and when did this happen? When did you understand that it was happening?
Yeah.
And part of your art. So maybe a two-part question there.
I think I realized it was happening. I spoke with my good friend Bria Berger about it. She actually also has synesthesia, but hers works with the numbers have personalities. And so she, that's what she does. She doesn't have the color association at all. But when I was talking to her, I realized, oh, okay, this isn't so wild. Like, other people understand this. And that really gave me, I think, the freedom to explore it in my art, too. And that's, you know, when I started writing the poems.
For Premonitions.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this was relatively recently when you, or so.
Yeah, yeah. I would say it was probably maybe 3 years ago, tops, that I started writing these exact poems. Mm. Yeah.
And so now it feels like this realization of, or this, well, you knew you had it, but that maybe naming it changes it.
Yeah, I think so. I think naming it changes it, or just embracing it too, not being afraid of it. And, you know, for me, that's totally what art is about, is being courageous, is doing things even if, you know, they're not popular. As I said before, I mean, I write and I dance and I paint because I have to. So,
well, I'm so glad you are, Elizabeth.
Thank you. Me too.
And so there are, I noticed on your website that you've got some upcoming dates. Right. Are there a couple of things that we could tell folks about?
Yeah, definitely. There will be one in Chicago, not this weekend, but the next.
October 13th.
Yes, October 13th. And then I'm also reading in Detroit at the East, I believe it's called the East Side Literary.
East Side Reading Series. Yes
exactly.
Okay.
So those are upcoming. And then I have a few out of town. I'm going to be reading upstate New York at the, near the Sing Sing prison. Yes.
So is that on purpose? I mean, it sounds like it is.
It is on purpose. A friend, Tomas Morin, who is a poet, he is writing, or has written, a long poem called Sing Sing, which is about that. And I'm illustrating it for him, but we're going to do a reading too, and just do some research and go up to, upstate New York and, yeah, see how it influences what we're working on.
So, and making more ink too.
Yeah.
That's going to be something that you're definitely working on in the coming weeks. What will autumn give you, and then, and then winter. And
yes.
Well, Elizabeth, thanks so much for on the program today. And come back anytime.
Okay, well, yes.
Okay. I feel like thanks to Steph for engineering, the Living Writers engineer. Thanks to Frank Uli for doing the editing the audio for the website. Remember, you know, check out Elizabeth's website, as we've been talking about, and follow also, if you'd like, Living Writers on Instagram and Twitter, and check out our website for the archived episodes. Thanks so much again to Elizabeth Schwul, her book, Premonitions. I'm T. Hetzel. Until next time.